weekend, Diana?
Me? Huh? Nothing very interesting.
The world remains in mourning after the death of the Superman.
And where is the Gotham Bat? The mass vigilante has been a no-show.
They said the Age of Heroes would never come again.
It has to.
Welcome to Kaboom Goes the Podcast. Here we are at episode 3, I believe, only many months since we recorded episode 2. But today we're going to be talking about, well, a whole bunch of things, but mostly we're going to talk about Justice League, which released about 2 weeks ago, I think, now of this recording. And we'll also be discussing the future of the DC Extended Universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and maybe even just superhero movies in general. Joining me today as my two co-hosts today, we've expanded from 2 to 3. I have two people with me. The first would be...
Yes, hi, I'm Matt Morrison. I am the managing editor for Kaboom.com and the most desperately overworked man in comic book criticism. Quite probably.
Yes, and joining us as well today is Roy.
Yes, I am Roy Buckingham. I am a recently joined film critic for Kaboom and I guess you could say a sash slinger.
Sass slinger. I like
sash
it.
Sure, sass.
Sass slinger, yes.
Exactly. I am Sarah Moran. I am the editor-in-chief of Kaboom.com, of which this is the official podcast. So, yeah, let's just dive right into it. I wrote the review, eventually, for the official review of Justice League. So I will let either one of you, whoever wants to lead off first, jump in with their impressions, and then I can come in last.
I'm going to let you go first, Roy. I know you've been holding this back for weeks.
Well, I can't say that I hated it, but I also can't say that I liked it. It's if there is a word I can use to describe it, is if anybody remembers that old Bugs Bunny cartoon where Bugs Bunny was suddenly straddled with that kind of Zoftig rabbit that talked like Zsa Zsa Gabor that kept going "Feh!" at everything. That was probably my reaction to this.
Okay.
When in Slobovia, do as the other slobs do.
Yes. I had a little bit of high hopes in the beginning, and then, of course, as everything started coming out about what's going on with the movie, my hopes started dying and dying and dying. And I went in, and it's not as bad as Batman versus Superman or Suicide Squad, but... then again, it's like being forced to eat food in the hospital for months upon months, and then when you get out of the hospital, you're greeted with a can of Campbell's chicken noodle soup.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, it's a little better, maybe. It's different.
Yeah. And especially after, you know, especially after how phenomenal Wonder Woman was, and just going into Justice League, and after seeing what can be possibly done with a... DC Universe movie when it's in the hands of a good director versus when it's in the hands of Zack Snyder, the difference were night and day. It really was. And I know that Josh Whedon had to work with what he had, not only with what Zack Snyder had, but with all the hands of Warner Brothers in that pot trying to do everything they could to do whatever their vision was. It came out as, for me, a mediocre mess.
Yeah, that is really, that's been an overall consensus that I've picked up from just about everyone I think who I've even heard an opinion about this movie. People who loved BVS and they loved Man of Steel, they are like, kind of like, this was not that great. And the people who hated those movies are saying the same. They're also unimpressed. Matt, what did you think overall about it?
I'm pretty much, you know, muted. I mean, there were parts of it that I liked, but there were parts of it that made me go, this really could have been done better in so many respects. Without getting too spoilery into the exact details, it definitely felt like it was a movie that was half finished and then finished by somebody else. So there are parts of the movie where you can say, yeah, this is definitely a Zack Snyder idea. And then suddenly there will be a little bit where you go, okay, this seems like something Joss Whedon would do. And it's not just the jokes, although that was the biggest complaint I heard, was that it's like, yes, we have the serious, epic Zack Snyder's fight scenes with the slow motion and the explosions. And then here's a quick little joke. And now it is dire and gloomy and epic. And now here's a little joke.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as split as that. And actually, from what I've heard from some of, like, the, you know, behind the scenes rumors, which we will hear from now until the end of time, because everyone is always going to wonder, like, what could have been. Some of these jokes were not necessarily Whedon. Like, there are certainly ones that are like, oh, that's a Whedon quip. Like, that was right. Put in like that. But it's my understanding, which I think I'm just going to say at this point, if we want to get into spoiler talk, that's fine. Our general impressions are not very exciting about the movie, because overall the movie isn't very exciting. To get into some spoilers, I believe that the bit at the end where Superman and Cyborg, no, Superman and Cyborg, and they're pulling the mother boxes apart, those little lines they exchange about being happy to be alive, I think that's from Snyder. I don't know for sure.
It felt flat enough to be from Snyder, because yeah. Humor is not one of his strong points when it comes to any movie that he's made.
No.
So yeah, that was definitely not a Whedon joke.
Right, but I did still, like, that was something that I actually liked, at least on Superman's part, because it was Superman not being so, like, grim and mopey. Like, I was kind of okay with him, like, trying to crack a joke, even if it wasn't that funny.
One of the big issues that I had with the movie, I mean, we'll get to the horned elephant in the room in a minute, I bet. but one of my biggest problems with the movie was with the Flash. I don't remember the Flash being that giant of a nebbish Jew in the comic book world, to be blunt about it. It got to the point where, I mean, I know that Flash is a geek, but I didn't think he was Woody Allen geek. And to me, the way that they portrayed the Flash in the movie was like a Woody Allen movie character looking for a Woody Allen movie. And really? That was very jarring to me. It really was.
Huh. Okay.
Especially when he started doing things like talking about his blood sugar and his allergies and everything. And it started becoming like Kyle's cousin Kyle on South Park, where he's constantly talking about his health issues. And I was just like, oh, come on, don't do this to the Flash.
Oh, well, Paul, if you don't want me getting into the Speed Force, forget about it. I got Spoktis in my Genectus Gazoink, fighting the Reverse Flash, let me tell you about it.
Well, see, that's funny, because I mean, I came away really enjoying Ezra Miller's performance as the Flash. For me, it was one of the highlights of the movie. But I can kind of see what you're saying. I think that perhaps is a problem of the reshoots and the cutting that had to happen. Because I know they talked about more scenes. They were trying to make a big deal about how much food he had to eat, how much food he had to eat to keep himself, like, running. The idea being that the Flash needs so much calories.
Right.
So I know that there were scenes that were cut, like, where Jason Momoa has talked about this in Ezra Miller, too, in an interview where, you know, like, they're in a, I don't know, I picture them in, like, in a van, like, they're in the Mystery Machine, but who knows what vehicle they were actually in. But they're in something like that, and the Flash is, like, just, like, stuffing burgers in his face, and they're, like, making jokes about what they're going to call him, and, like, and Momoa makes some kind of, like, food-based joke that I can't recall now. But that was obviously cut from the film. So I think there could have been more moments like that that maybe would have made his weirdness make a bit more sense. But I think it's also just kind of, they really wanted to make sure it was different from what we have, you know, on the CW, which is like the most prominent now version of Barry Allen as the Flash. Mm-hmm. I think they were just really striving to make it different. But no, I can see your complaints of it. And so that may just come down to a personal taste thing.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that the one of the most jarring things for me in the movie, and I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one that this happened with, that took me out of the movie a lot, was the CGI that they had to do to Superman's face.
When you first said the big horned elephant, like, I know what you knew who the character. I knew you were talking about Steppenwolf, but this is actually what came to my mind, because it was so horribly distracting.
Oh, it was super derp at a couple of points. It really was. And I mean, at one point when he's at in Smallville at the farm, you look at his face and it kind of looks like Ash's face from the Army of Darkness when it's stretched after getting out of the book. And I'm like, what is wrong with his face? And I don't even remember the dialogue in that scene because all I could think of is, what's wrong with his face? And I'm sitting there going, what's wrong with his face? And it just really took me out of the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I picked up on it in that first very oddly included and filmed camera video that the film starts with.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first, I'm like, look at that. And of course, once I was watching it, then I remembered, oh my God, right. They CGI'd out his mustache. So then I was just like looking for it the whole movie. Such a weird decision.
Maybe it was the angle I was viewing it from. The theater I saw it at, I was stuck up on the front row. So I didn't really, I mean, everything looked elongated to me. So I really didn't notice any issues with the upper lip, but the Steppenwolf CGI. My whole
That
reaction,
was really atrocious.
I was looking at that and thinking, wow, Zack Snyder has chosen the best PS2 animation 2005 had to offer.
Not since Sega Dreamcast has there been so much good video game graphics from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh man, it's one of those things that I really like. I don't even know why they bothered to hire the actor who I'm going to butcher his name. Is it Kyren? Did you say it Kyren? Kyren Hines? I don't know. It's a terrible pronunciation,
Kylo
but
Ren?
he's
I don't know.
No.
No,
But
it's not Kylo
he's
Ren.
a no. He's a great actor. Most people would probably know him as he played Mance Rayder on Game of Thrones, and then you just cover his face up with all this CGI crap, and it's like, why does it even matter who it is? I don't get it.
Not only that, but he'll probably go down in history as the worst developed villain in comic book movie history. And that's saying a lot because we've had Selina in Supergirl, played by Faye Dunaway, and then we had Sharon Stone's disaster in Catwoman. But honestly, at least they have a level of camp to it to where you can kind of laugh at it. Where with Steppenwolf, it's just bland. It is the blandest villain I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, I remember this character being more interesting than this.
Which is
Being
where
more multidimensional than the one dimension he was giving through the whole film.
I almost wonder if you had put the actor in makeup. Not that I don't think he wasn't on set with them. They probably like had dots on his face and mo-capped it, though it doesn't look like it. But I almost feel like had you put the actor in makeup, allow him to feel more like in that character of this weird kind of demon god thing, alien thing. Then I don't know, maybe we could have gotten, yes, a more evocative performance that, yes, was at least interesting, because that's like the biggest crime. It's just boring. It's boring, and this ties into what is really then the whole driving force of this movie, the mother boxes, which
They don't
like
explain.
they don't
Yeah.
explain, and they just, and this is what I can't, it's like they do the exact same thing that the world engine that Zod brought in Man of Steel was going to do. That one was going to terraform Earth into a new Krypton. This one is terraforming it into a new apocalypse. Like, it's the exact same threat.
Which, to be fair, did happen in the Superman comics a lot. Yeah, I mean, the whole new Krypton thing, they did the last time they did have the whole thing about Kryptonians coming from the Phantom Zone and trying to take over Earth. It was more they wound up establishing their own planet and then declaring war on Earth rather than trying to shift Earth around in the first place, which reveals one of the bigger complaints that people have about Man of Steel, which is like, why don't you just take your world-shaping stuff and go to Mars? And if they'd said one line about, well, we need, organic material in order to kickstart the process, which is why we have to kill you people instead of, that would have explained it, but
Well, the movie explained a lot of nothing. I mean, it didn't, and not only it didn't explain that, but I mean, I know a lot of people are sick of origin films and stuff like that, but the thing is that we're having characters being introduced for the very first time in cinema. So, I mean, a lot of people that I have heard that is defending the movie when it comes to this aspect. They're saying that, you know, these are well-established characters and people know about it and everything. I call BS on that, because while, you know, people can know who Aquaman and the Flash is, Steppenwolf and Cyborg, they may not. And I think that if they would have, you know, if they took the time to do the extremely fast Cliff Notes version of Steppenwolf to explain who he was in the movie, they could have at least done the same thing for the Flash, Aquaman, and Cyborg. Instead, it's just, here they are, and
Give us Kirby for Beginners, the 5-minute version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to say, while I came away liking what they did with Cyborg, I agree. Like, we could have, I mean, you're right, with all of the characters, we could have gotten a bit more on them, but they clearly were restricted by jamming three new heroes into this movie.
That leads to actually my biggest complaint about it, and, you know, this goes along with it, but it's about Aquaman in particular.
That's what I was going to say. I loved Aquaman, but his scene to Atlantis was probably one of the most disappointing parts of the movie for me, which is unfortunate.
Last time I checked, Atlanteans didn't need an air bubble to talk underwater.
They didn't. And James Wan, who's directing Aquaman, has already confirmed that is not how they talk underwater in Aquaman, the movie. So why did they make an air bubble for this scene? Who knows?
Well, even Mara, I noticed the trailer had a lot of deleted scenes in it. All the different trailers that came out, there's a lot of scenes I did not see in this cut. A couple of them with Mara. I mean, I found out there was actually quite a number of scenes with her that was cut out, but they didn't even bother to mention who she was. My partner, Chris, he was like, who is that? And I had to explain to him who that was. And I found myself doing that a lot with this movie. And for me to be able to do that, when you are trying to, I mean, I understand that there's going to be a lot of fanboy service with these movies and everything, but if you're trying to expand outside of the comic book fans and you're trying to bring in new people to your product, you want to let them in on the fun. And this movie didn't do that, in my opinion. It didn't let people in on these characters to make those who are not that familiar with them understand why we like them so much. Because the DC fans were like, oh my God, Mara, when they saw her in the trailer, and in the movie she was an afterthought.
Yeah, my biggest complaint about that was exactly that. I mean, they don't even identify Mara by name, never less explain who she is, why she's important to Arthur, what their relationship is, because what little we see kind of hints at that, well, I know about you and you know who I am, but you don't really have anything to do with Atlantis, so already it's kind of a defiance of what's going on in the comics right now, where he's the actual king of Atlantis, and right now it's like, okay, well, you know Aquaman in the comics. You have been reading it. You know that originally he was the bastard son of the Atlantean queen, who eventually became king of Atlantis after whole political scandal with the previous king trying to invade the surface world and bad stuff happening and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, that's probably what's going on here, and he'll become king at the end of the Aquaman movie. But as Roy said, if you don't follow the comics, if you don't know this history, none of this is going to help you or matter to you.
No, you're right. And what they put in that scene, like, I feel like every word out of Mara's mouth in that scene is like this exposition drop that I think they're trying to get people up to speed, but it's really just not enough information. And without the right context, it doesn't make any sense. Because she's just like, when she sees him, she's like, you're at Lana's, like, long-lost son or whatever. Like, she might as well just even say, like, true king of Atlantis. For more, like, check in next fall when we give you the full movie. So that was disappointing. So we basically touched on, unless anyone has any other Cyborg thoughts, because I will say I was really worried about how he was going to come out in this movie.
Yes.
So I was pleasantly surprised.
Go ahead, Roy.
No, go ahead, Starman.
Okay. I was pleasantly surprised as well, because a lot of the complaints I heard early on was that, you know, his whole subplot was about him being a machine trying to be human, when Cyborg's conflict in the comics has always been the other way around. You know, the human fighting to maintain his humanity in the face of becoming more and more of a machine. And there was a little bit of that with him you know, being afraid that he is more machine than man, but it wasn't what they were talking about, where he was going to be like RoboCop and was going to have the distorted robot voice and what is love, baby, don't hurt me no
yeah,
more.
I'm so glad they didn't do that. That would have been
well, from what I understand, that was one of the major reshoots, was because apparently he did talk like that, and I'm glad that if there's one thing I'm glad that they did with the reshoots, it was that. I'm glad that they made Cyborg sound human.
And he said booyah.
Yes.
Booyah!
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that a lot. Which then made me a little sad that, like, with all the stuff they had Aquaman saying, like, my man, and stuff like that, we couldn't get an outrageous. I was like, come on. Like, the guy, it's the closest thing he has to a tagline like that, like a saying, even though it's from a cartoon.
Well, oh, well. Unless you go by Neptune's beard.
Yeah, you know what? We didn't get anything like that either, but
nope,
I'm sure that
like
was
that.
Too corny for them.
Well, we still, we haven't gotten Diana saying, you know, great Hera either.
That's true. And that would even feel more like in line with her character.
Now, one other thing that I do want to, well, actually two other things I want to address with this movie is the Affleck in the room. Is it just me, or did it seem like he absolutely did not want to be in this movie?
Oh, I agree. I think, I feel like, and people have definitely discussed this before, that like Affleck is an actor who really wants to please people. He really wants to be liked. And because, even though I think people didn't hate his version of Batman, but because that movie wasn't so universally received, Batman v Superman, I could just feel the weight of that the whole time he was shooting this movie. I think he's done with it. I think he, you know, they talk, like, every day you hear a new rumor, like, whether or not he's going to be in Matt Reeves's The Batman movie. And I don't know. I think if he's in it, it should be a passing of the torch movie. That's, like, the best way they can do it. It's, like, just, you know, kind of move away from Batman, or, like, he actually... You know, it isn't like a Robin or a Nightwing he trains. He actually trains like a new Batman, maybe kind of like Batman Beyond.
That's one of the rumors that's been going around, actually, that they're going to bring Terry McGinnis in on the next one.
And, like, that would be rad. Or I could see them, you know, not making it Terry McGinnis because they're like, no one will know who that is. We're going to have him be a young man, and his name's going to be Robin. That's just Dark Knight Rises. Oh, that always bothered me to the end of time. That will bother me.
that does fit into a Snyder's sense of subtlety, but
yeah.
But then again, they did that in the Nolan movies too. So
that's what I mean. I'll never get over that. I do overall really enjoy them, but there's just like little things like that that I'm like, why?
Dark Knight Rises definitely had flaws. It really did.
Yes.
I thought that giving Bane the voice of Berlin Underbite from the Venture Brothers was a very bold creative choice.
The other big issue that I had with Justice League was Lois. Lois was, for me in this movie, fart in the wind. She really was. I mean, I understand why they had her there, but you talk about MacGuffin. This was MacGuffin beyond MacGuffin. And I, when they were saying bring in the ultimate bullet, I immediately rolled my eyes and said, oh God, here comes Lois. Here's her sole purpose in this movie. And sure enough, there it is. I mean, I thought that she was wasted and pointless in Batman versus Superman. And I didn't think she could get any more pointless and wasted until I saw this movie. And I was just like, why even bother have her? You know, I mean, they could have found another way to knock some sense into Superman's head than what they did. So, but...
I know, poor Amy Adams. She's so much better than this.
Yes, she is.
You're totally right. Like I like the idea that, you know, it would be someone like Lois or even his mother, maybe. You know, oh man, what's her name? Why would you say that name? Anyway, it would be somebody like that, some human, you know, connection that he has that would bring him out of like this weird pet cemetery funk that he's in. But it just plays so obvious. Which... And it is terrible payoff for what it was supposed to be, that tease in Batman v Superman when, like, Flash came back and, like, was trying to telling Batman Lois was the key. Like, is this what he was referring to? Because I don't know. Maybe it would have been a better movie if Superman had gone, like, crazy evil and we got that weird, like, nightmare future that they teased in that dream that he had. I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you brought that scene up because, just, you know, quick aside, the biggest laugh that happened in the theater when I saw it, it wasn't any of the jokes. It was the whole bit during that scene where, you know, Superman, you know, crazy Superman is holding up Batman and is, you know, getting ready to crush him, and then suddenly Lois walks up and, you know, shouts out to him, and then he just throws Batman aside and then just, you know, goes to Lois. It's just, he just literally, you know, drops Batman, and everybody just laughed at, you know, Batman just, you know, dropping out a shot.
And that's then, what I mean. Actually, I enjoyed that whole scene, but yeah.
Yeah, and nobody, you know, but nobody laughed later when they actually cut back to Batman on the ground going like, that hurt. Ow.
No, he's saying, because Superman says to him, like,
oh, I'm definitely bleeding.
Do you bleed? Or something like that. Or, like, you will, I don't know, whatever. And then when they cut back to Batman, he's like, yeah, something's bleeding. Which, like, you know, that was kind of funny.
That should have gotten a laugh, but it didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just dropping kind of, Batman did get a laugh, so.
Now, to kind of give you guys an idea of the impact it had when I went to go see the movie, I actually went to a drive-in theater to see this film.
Oh, neat.
And it was kind of an interesting double feature because it was this movie immediately followed by Wonder Woman, which I'm like, okay, well, you know, Wonder Woman's already out on home video. Everybody who wants it owns it. At the same time, it's like their way of saying, okay, we know this is a crappy film, so we're sorry. Here's a good one. But not only was that going on, but playing on the screen next to it was The Star, the animated movie about the birth of Jesus. There were more cars at the Star than there was at Justice League.
I would believe it.
To be fair, we do live in the Bible Belt.
Yeah, but it's still
that's true. But
it still spoke volumes to me. And I mean, even though, you know, the Star didn't make as much money as Justice League did in the box office that weekend, still at the same time, Justice League technically bombed not only opening weekend, but it's now bombed. Period.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it won its opening weekend. I think just, was it not the biggest, like, most mainstream movie releasing that weekend? But it didn't even cross 100 million. And then the next weekend, it's beat by Coco, which is a delightful film, by the way. Everyone should go see it.
And then not only that, but it also had a 63% drop in the worldwide box office. Not just American box office, worldwide boxes. When your major property film like this can't even interest China, you know there's something wrong with your movie. And this movie, they were even saying, okay, let's see what the international score is like. Didn't even do it.
And see, I think that as much as, you know, I was not a real big fan of Man of Steel, and I really did not enjoy Batman v Superman. But I have to say, I think they hurt themselves more with this weird, like, Frankenstein's movie by, like, stitching to get, like, because so many people, especially, I know, a big Zack Snyder DCU or EU defender, is a writer, or an editor, I should say, over at Screen Rant, Andrew Dice, and he is so disappointed in this film, and, like, he was really a big defender of both Man of Steel and BVS. Like, he loved these movies. He's just really into this, and I'm all for that. People love it, they love it. But he did not like this movie. And so if he's like a barometer for the many fans that, like, obviously BVS made a lot of money, so people went and saw this movie, either just because they heard it was a garbage fire or not. But Justice League did not generate that interest. Even with Wonder Woman in it, who, like, is a bona fide star now, not just Gal Gadot playing her, but, like, the character now is, like, bankable for them.
Well, I think what killed Justice League was just all, I mean, not only what the sins of what came before it with Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and Suicide Squad, but just all of the news that was coming out from behind the scenes of all of the test screening reactions and how they went in and Frankensteined it up after test screening, after test screening, after test screening. And they were literally tinkering and monkeying with the movie until it was time to release the film. And people just kept hearing this over and over. And at least to me, when I kept hearing about how they are going back and retooling this and retweaking that, it made my excitement and also my overall anticipation for the film die each day, to the point where Matt was jokingly saying that I'm about ready to sing the Dune song from, you know, Invader Zim.
I fully expected you to do that.
And it was getting to that point. And I will admit, Matt, after the second week in the box office, when it was revealed that it did officially bomb, I did sing the Doom song. So
I knew it. Doom, 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 doom. I'm done. Go ahead.
So, well, this could be a good point. We've definitely covered that Justice League is just a big, sloppy mess of a movie that, while... Okay, I guess this is a good transition because we can talk about what the DC Extended Universe has coming, and has it piqued any interest? I think Wonder Woman 2 is obviously like its own thing. People were already going to be on board for that movie. I was certainly excited for it.
Yeah, I don't think Wonder Woman 2 is going to have an issue. I think the issues are probably going to be not only the Aquaman movie coming out next year, but also Shazam, I think, is going to suffer as well, especially since they announced that we're not going to be introduced first to Black Adam, who is the villain in Shazam, until Suicide Squad Part 2.
I thought that was weird. Like, how are you not having the Shazam movie with Black Adam, like, being your villain?
Yeah.
That would make way more sense, because then you also get The Rock in your movie, and you're almost guaranteed not to have at least a total flop by having The Rock in your movie. So I don't get it. Aquaman, I think that's the one that I'm still excited for Aquaman. And because I didn't, like I said, I was charmed by Jason Momoa's like portrayal of him. There wasn't a whole lot for him to really like do. I dig you know?
Plus he's pretty.
Right, like exactly, like he's pretty to look at. He's a charming, likable guy. He's gonna give you a good performance. Like you're going to enjoy it.
Well, the one thing that has me that still has me have hope with the Aquaman movie is who's directing it. I'm a big fan of James Wan. I've yet to see a film that he has made that I've not enjoyed. The man is really good at directing horror. He's actually revived the horror genre, in my opinion. And he also took the Fast and the Furious franchise and made something fun with it as well.
Okay, so, that's what I was thinking. When you were saying horror, I was like, what? I thought he did the Fast and Furious movies, but yeah. Okay, yes.
Yeah, he did. He started off in horror, then he was given the reins to Fast and the Furious and just, you know, made that what it is. I mean, he was just like, okay, stupid action film, I got this. And I'm curious to see what he's going to do now with a comic book film. I mean, the man's a really good storyteller, so I'm hoping he does it justice.
Yeah, and so I think, like, they, you know, they first always said, like, we're going to have a director-driven universe. It's not going to be, like, they're not going to have, like, a Kevin Feige who oversees everything. And, you know, like, when they gave Patty Jenkins a movie, that turned out wonderful. And when you gave Zack Snyder a movie, I mean, you got Zack Snyder movies, so people shouldn't be too surprised by that. If we get a quality film in Aquaman, I mean, they could really turn it around. Because the Justice League feels very much like they knew they had a big mess on their hands, so they just wanted to like push it out as fast as they could. Yeah. Because a lot of people were bringing up, why didn't they wait? Like, you could have pushed this movie another 6 months, or maybe even like 3 months. I don't know. You didn't have to release it right here, right now.
Yeah.
And you could have maybe worked on a little bit.
It definitely needed some more work. I mean, I understand that they don't want to compete with Infinity War because, let's face it, that's going to be a juggernaut next year. I mean, there's a few juggernauts coming out next year, but that's going to be a giant juggernaut in the box office. But still, it really needed some more development. I mean, it's kind of hard now to try to determine what really is the worst film of the year or the biggest bomb of the year. Is it going to be Justice League or is it going to be The Mummy? Because you've got The Mummy, which officially killed a franchise before it even began. And then you have Justice League, which is one of the most poorest performing big giant tentpole comic book films in history. And now there's rumors that some of the DC Extended Universe projects like Flashpoint are going to be canceled because of it flopping. So it's interesting to see what Warner Brothers' reaction is going to be to the fact that Justice League did bomb.
You're right, and the thing is, we're probably not going to know until Aquaman, because they have that movie. They're not going to just yank that now. Like they have.
No, they're filming that now already. Yeah. So,
yeah, like so that movie is going to happen, and obviously, like we said, Wonder Woman 2 is going to happen. But I think they are going to have to do a lot of assessing. And I mean, Flashpoint, you know, given how that story works, and you know, I'm not the first person to bring it up. It can result in a universe reset. They do have an opportunity with that movie to fix or to course correct in a way that they could then continue on with their universe without having to completely throw everything out.
Yeah, and I the thing though with Flashpoint is that I kind of wish Warner Brothers would let Flashpoint go, because they've done it in the comic book, they've done an animated movie, they've done it on television, and now they want to do it in the movie big screen. There are better storylines out there in the DC universe that deserve to be told on the big screen than Flashpoint.
I would even be in favor of them taking elements from several of, you know, you can consider, it's not called this, but Flashpoint is kind of like, you know, the many crises that DC has had throughout their history. I think they should kind of just come up with their own thing. Like, we don't need to strictly adapt something from the story. So, I mean, were they to do a movie inspired by Flashpoint, like, I don't necessarily need to get, like, you know, evil versions of Aquaman and Wonder Woman and have, like, the, you know, hardline vigilante dad Batman. Like, they didn't need to do it, like, verbatim.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and here comes the classic Marvel versus DC thing that's going on here. With the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they did that. I mean, with Civil War, they definitely told their own version of Civil War, and it looks like they're going to do that with the Infinity War as well. I mean, it looked like that they were going to be following things the way that they were in the movies, until the Winter Soldier came about. And when the Winter Soldier suddenly did that 180-degree turn with Hydra, that's when I realized, oh, they're doing their own thing. Okay. And Civil War definitely proved it, that there's like, yeah, we're going to be, you know, using these ideas from the comic books, but hey, you know, just because you read them doesn't mean that that's how it's going to turn out. And I applaud them for that, because it's their own interpretations. It's bringing something new to the table, and it's bringing something new that actually physically works.
Right. And maybe this should just be our transition to now. We can talk a little bit about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's really just no denying that they are doing it much better. They're also doing it much differently, and they are so much further along. So they just have all the advantages right now.
That's one thing you cannot deny, is that the formula that Marvel came up with when it came to doing their movies, they did it right. They absolutely did it right. A lot of studios are trying to copy that or do their own thing, and it's not working as well as it did with Marvel. I would say probably the only one that's probably working as close to it would probably be Harry Potter. Because, I mean, Fantastic Beasts could have just been a giant turd, but it wasn't. And as a matter of fact, I myself feel Fantastic Beasts is better than Harry Potter. It's a formula that worked, but you can't capture lightning in a bottle twice. And this is definite proof of that.
For sure. And I mean, we could say, I mean, DC is kind of, you know, their CW shows, I think, have certainly accomplish something of that, where I think you're trying to recreate this superhero comic book world in a different medium. But it is a different medium, and so it's a different style. Like, there are different styles of stories. They're CW stories. They lean a little more heavily on that soap opera drama.
Which works.
Yeah, it does. It totally works for what they're doing there.
And comic books, let's be honest, they're soap operas anyway.
They are, yes. But when you're doing
definitely
the big
Pulp
movies,
Fiction novels, yeah.
Yeah, but when you're doing the big movies, you need that, like, grand spectacle and, I think, heightened stakes. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe has just, they've nailed that, because we also care about these characters so much. Like, if we want to talk about that Infinity War trailer, like, there are moments in that trailer. I mean, you're worried about these characters because, you know, 19 films in, these people are going to die. Like, they are going to kill characters in major deaths. Yeah, so they can clear the board and bring in new characters.
See, I really didn't hear a lot of that when the trailer came out. Most of the commentary I was hearing from about the trailer, it was the same nitpicking about, oh, well, Black Widow shouldn't have blonde hair, or Steve should be wearing the nomad costume if he's got the beard, or, you know, my personal joke about, wow, Bruce Willis is going to make an awesome Thanos.
I love that somebody actually took that head and put it on the body of a California raisin. I think that's my favorite
that's good.
That I've seen so far.
I've seen somebody, they painted an orange hair and beard on it, and it looked like Joss Whedon, which I thought was pretty funny.
Or the one where they painted him yellow and had the beard, and it was Homer Simpson.
Thanos is kind of still a big question mark because Marvel hasn't been too great with their villains. They seem to do everything else right, but they really are very few and far between are their really great, memorable villains. One of who
chair.
I think they're going to kill in this movie. I'm really thinking that they're going to kill Loki.
Marvel, that is definitely their Achilles heel is the villains, because the only two villains, at least in my opinion, so far that has been good in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, of course, Loki. Loki's just a fun character to begin with, but also Ego in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I thought Ego was a great villain. I mean, it took a lot to make you actually hate Kurt Russell's guts, but you hated Kurt Russell's guts in that movie.
They did. They did a really good job with that. I would also say, even though it was very unexpected, Zemo in Civil War, only because they did something so different with it, which is kind of what Ego was too. Like, Ego wasn't their typical villain by any stretch.
Yeah, Zemo was, I think, the first time that the villain won, which was interesting. So,
yeah.
Which I applauded at that also. I was like, wow, it's about time that we had something where outside of the Star Wars universe where the villain won. So,
I've got one more good villain to add to that.
Okay.
Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Ooh, good call.
Yeah.
And it's another one where the actor is kind of like playing against type, and I don't want to say the twist comes out of nowhere, but the twist for the protagonist really comes out of nowhere, which is great.
Well, and the thing with his character also is that his reason for doing it, you can't fault him. You're like, you know, he's got a point here.
Did screw you over, how could I forget about that? That was so good. And he's still alive, so always a chance to bring him back. They got better at that. I think they've realized when they have a good villain, they need to keep him around, not just kill them when they're done in a movie.
They never did explain how Loki is still alive.
They didn't. We just see him. Well, I guess if he stole the Tesseract... or do you mean from Thor the Dark World?
I meant from the end of the original Thor. Because the original Thor, he was, you know, floating into space. And I guess maybe Thanos might have saved him at some point between there, but we never had it confirmed.
That's true. That would be my guess.
Find out Infinity Wars,
Although it's funny you mentioned the end of Thor the Dark World and the start of Ragnarok. Just the thing that I loved most about that movie, spoiler for everybody who hadn't seen it yet, Thor does get back to Asgard and uncovers that, yes, Loki has been posing as Odin this whole time. What does Loki do with his, I am now the Allfather, I have all of this, I have everything I wanted, I am now king of Asgard, I have all this power. What does he do? He pretty much initiates an arts program. Now, that's the first thing he does. He, increases financing for the arts, and it's like, that's kind of a lame-ass villain thing to do. It's like, wow, you... Granted, your egotism is that you were getting them to do a play about how awesome you are and how everybody is sad that you're dead, but,
Well, not only that, but he also...
progressive builder of, fine arts.
And not only that, but he also believed in, not having the armies invade other worlds and just stay where they're at. And I'm just like, okay, so he also believes in peace amongst his own people. I'm torn now.
He is the savior of Asgard. They wouldn't have gotten all blown up. Like Hela would, like, yeah, it would have been fine. Well, I guess no, Thor still would, or Odin still would have died. But no, that was great, and a wonderful way for them to just neatly tie up what was such a dangling thread. I mean, everybody, like one big takeaway from Thor: The Dark World is like, oh, the Loki's ruling Asgard now. But in just a short, great scene, they just like, whoop, we're just done with that now. We're moving on.
It turned out he was a good ruler. Who knew?
Yeah.
So, but I, when you're comparing the two universes, from each other, yes, the DC Universe movies have been around a lot longer than Marvel. But I think that what DC needs to do if they want to get renewed interest in their films is set Batman and Superman aside. Just set them aside. We've had their stories told over and over and over again. Focus on the characters we've not seen on the big screen. Wonder Woman proved that's what we wanted.
I
And
completely agree.
if Aquaman does the same thing, that really needs to send. I mean, yeah, unfortunately it bombed with Green Lantern, but there are tons of reasons why it bombed with Green Lantern.
Well, yeah, the argument there is like, the same one that they would make against like, oh, well, like female-led superhero movies don't work. And it's like, well, yeah, because you gave us like Catwoman and Elektra, and those were garbage. You give us
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, and it works. So yes, like Green
You have to
Lantern
actually
probably
care
scared
about
them.
the project. You really have to
Well, Green
have some
Lantern did,
care for the
because
project.
the problem that they had with Green Lantern, and in a weird way, Green Lantern kind of wound up precipitating Zack Snyder's rise to become the, grand unifying vision behind the DCEU, because Green Lantern came out and it bombed, and they said, okay, well, this is too jokey, this is too detail oriented. Now, granted, that's because they got a lot of the details messed up, and the theatrical release cut out all the background stuff they needed to have the story make sense. But
And plus,
that's.
also, we had a promo for Hot Wheels in the movie, so.
That track effect was awesome. That was vintage Green Lantern, sir.
And yeah,
But.
that is the thing. Like Green Lantern's a that's surprising that they couldn't have nailed that in a film, even to make it like a passable movie, but yeah.
Yeah. The effect was cheesy, but I'll give them props for actually doing something that Hal would do, because they're like, well, what about this? What about this? I'm like, yeah, but Hal is kind of a straightforward guy. He does the whole minimum effort to get anything done. I mean, he could build a gigantic laser cannon, but he's going to do a boxing glove because I want to hit this thing. But, total digression. So, the Green Lantern
But
movie, because it was that whole, happy, cheerful, lighter take on the superhero thing, that one making him go grim dark with Man of Steel and keep going away from that, brighter image.
And it definitely falls into, and again, like I'm by no means the first person to make this observation, but Marvel, they didn't have their big guns when they started their movie universe. Like Iron Man, it's almost unimaginable to think back on a time when Iron Man was not like the star of the Marvel universe that he is now. And
Yeah, because when it came to Marvel, I mean, those who are the uninitiated into the comic books, the only real characters they knew with Marvel were Wolverine and Spider-Man, and that's pretty much it. I mean, some people may be Fantastic Four, but no, I was surprised with how many people did not know who Iron Man was. So, yeah, that was a big gamble for them to do, was to start off with Iron Man. It was a gamble that worked.
Yeah, and it works because, or at least it has more potential to work because people don't have those first impressions. With Batman and Superman, like we have, a good half dozen versions to compare them to
Yeah.
because we've had them all.
Right.
And then, with Wonder Woman, like there was the Linda Carter TV show, but one that was one TV show from the 70s and 80s, and it was a TV show that was, meant to be so different. It wasn't really like you couldn't, the comparisons weren't the same as like, oh, well, you mean that Batman movie that came out like less than 10 years ago? Yeah, less than
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah, and with Aquaman, I mean, the only thing we're going to have to compare with Aquaman is the is the cartoon series that made him look like the wimpiest member of the Justice League. So
right, super friends, exactly.
Exactly. So I mean, it's going to. I hope they do a good job with it. But yeah, DC and Warner Brothers really need to take a step back and re-examine how they're doing everything here. Warner Brothers also needs to do what they did with the Wonder Woman movie and get their hands out of the cookie jar. Let the director make the movie. Unless, of course, it's in a situation like Zack Snyder where the intellectual property starts getting very questionable in the interpretation, then at that point I would say, okay, step in. But, I mean, if you're going to let somebody who is very familiar with the product tell the tale, let them tell the tale.
Yeah, and I mean, do you guys think, do they need somebody there like Kevin Feige? I mean, I can't say I've agreed with every decision he's made, and obviously the Marvel Universe has made bad decisions, and there have been bad movies, but overall, they've pretty much stayed on track. And it's really impressive that they have now this with Infinity War, that will be the 19th film, and that's only then like the start of Phase 4, and then they have plans beyond Phase 4. Like I can't even put my mind around how many movies they are going to eventually have, assuming the world doesn't end or something like that. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe the DC Universe does need somebody like that.
Or maybe they just need to not think about doing a universe and just have, you know, focus on individual films and keep it at that point for a while, and then just slowly bring it together naturally like they did with Marvel. Not worry about playing catch up, just, you know, we'll do it as we do it. Or
I think that's their biggest sin right now, is that they're trying to force something to happen that needs to actually happen organically.
And to give a good example of, you know, how they should be doing it, look at the CW shows, because this past week they had their big annual crossover between all four of their main shows, The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, and it has been getting critical acclaim. The fans loved it, and no less an authority than Mark Wade, who is pretty much the grand poobah of comic trivia nerds like me, said that he watched it, and this is easily the greatest thing anybody has done with live-action superheroes, movie, TV, anything. This perfectly captured the feel of a classic comic book crossover. And that's
definitely.
And that's especially impressive coming from Wade, who has been one of the harshest critics of everything DC-related ever since there was some drama with him in the editorial. So for him to say anything that positive about anything DC related right now, that's like, you know, the tablets on Mount Sinai just came down. Because, I think I may be the only person who is caught up on the Arrowverse right now, but yeah, Crisis on Earth X, it was phenomenal. And if you have not had a chance...
Yeah, I was going to say, we want to talk about it just real quickly? We can even wrap up on this, because I did watch it, and yes, while Flash is the only show I'm current on, I will agree, it was great.
You had no trouble keeping up with it, because they actually did a pretty good job of trying to leave it open-ended enough where, okay, you don't know who these characters are, but we can introduce you to the basics and keep it going.
Yeah, I think they kind of, I won't say required, but it helped to maybe have like a cursory knowledge, like I understood, you know, I know what's going on with Firestorm, right? And I also know that Victor Garber was leaving the show. So, like, I kind of got the feeling, like, oh, this is how they're going to figure out how they're going to write it out. Now, spoilers for anybody who has not yet watched Crisis on Earth-X, I was originally thinking, like, they're not going to kill him. They'll give him a happy ending. And then he started talking about his happy ending, and then I was like, oh, my God, no, they're going to kill him. And then they did.
Yep.
But it was such a wonderfully written – I mean, I was crying. Like, it made me cry. I wasn't, you know, bawling my eyes out, but there was definitely, like, wetness on my face. I thought they handled that so beautifully that I was really moved and really, really surprised that they would do that in the crossover. But that could get people, you know, who haven't been watching Legends being like, I need to check this, you know, out. I want to get their whole story, or I want to see where it goes next and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think for the most part, most of the people who watch the Arrowverse shows do watch all of them, with maybe the possible exception of there's some Supergirl fans who only watch Supergirl, maybe a couple of Flash fans who only watch The Flash, or people who skip Arrow because, well, Arrow's so depressing and dark compared to everything else. But, yeah, I thought they actually did a pretty good job of trying to make it accessible to everybody, because the Supergirl part actually focused on Supergirl for the most part, and all the other characters who we see are the ones who got some attention on Supergirl before, and, you know, like her whole scene with Barry about, you know, so what happened to, oh, your ex-boyfriend is now in space. Yeah. I got nothing. See, sorry.
And that's what it should do. And I mean, I don't get it. I honestly don't get it, because DC has nailed it with television. And for the most part, DC's also nailed it with their animated universe.
Oh, theirs is so superior to Marvel. It's embarrassing. Yeah.
Because I mean, there's been a couple of missteps with the animated universe. I mean, with you know, the Killing Joke controversy and the controversy with Batman and Harley. But overall, I mean, one of the biggest and greatest examples, I think, of how right they're doing it with DC animation is Dark Justice. Dark Justice, to me, is one of the best animated movies that they've ever done. And I mean, there's...
You mean Justice League Dark?
Justice League Dark.
Yeah. I was about to say, I think I have a good grasp of all of them, and I don't know that one. I actually haven't seen Justice League Dark yet.
Yeah, Justice League Dark is incredible because, I mean, they did right in introducing Constantine to an audience who didn't know him beyond, you know, the comic book or the short-lived television show. Same thing with Zatanna and the other characters. I would have liked a little more Swamp Thing in it, but still, it was a great way to do it. And what they did was, while Batman is part of it, he wasn't the main focus. He was kind of like the outsider looking in on this whole universe, and that worked perfectly for me for this with introducing these characters. And that's something that maybe the DC cinematic universe can do as well, is that if you're going to have these characters that are already well established, maybe not make them the main focus.
Yeah, and that's kind of the route that they took with, which is one of my favorite of the animated films, Assault on Arkham, which is just like the far, far superior Suicide Squad movie. I wish they had just adapted that movie and it would have been so much better. But that's a similar thing where, like, yeah, Batman's not the focus. It's about the team. He ends up being pretty crucial towards the end because their stories, like Batman's story with the Suicide Squad, are doing kind of dovetails eventually. But... yeah, like, and I think those, and when you're talking about Justice League Dark, there was supposed to be a live-action Justice League Dark movie, and I think that just sort of disappeared.
Yeah, well, it did.
Yeah.
And which is a shame, too, because honestly, if they could have done with the live-action movie what they did with the animated movie, it would have been phenomenal, because that animated movie just had me on the edge of my seat. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Sadly, they probably wouldn't have, and it would have ended up just like Suicide Squad or something.
Yeah,
another
mess, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shall we wrap it up on that note?
I think we certainly can. So Justice League, it's a mess. There are enjoyable moments. I guess I should try and get that point out too. I didn't hate myself watching it like I did watching Batman v Superman. Like the 2 hours kind of breezed by. The movie is so... like inconsequential. You're just like, oh, all right, we're here at the end.
Yeah. What I think sums up Justice League best is a line from the movie with the whole where Superman says to Batman, "You hate me," and Batman just goes, "I don't not hate, not like, you know."
Exactly.
That's pretty much me describing this movie. Just, I don't not like. I got nothing.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. It really is.
So that's just, which is unfortunate, because there's no excitement about it. You know, I can't say no one, but I do say the three of us did not like Batman v Superman, but it's kind of more fun to make fun of it than it is to say anything good about Justice League.
Yep.
You know, that Martha moment will live in infamy, which is kind of great.
I'm actually disappointed that her name was not screamed in this movie.
I know, like, why couldn't they, I don't know. I don't know how they could have worked it in, but somehow...
The fact that there is more anticipation around a movie that's about Tommy Wiseau than there is the movie about a beloved franchise in comic books, that speaks volumes.
I think it does. And you know, it comes up every time a superhero movie fails. But like the fatigue around the superhero movie genre, I think you just can't phone it in anymore because people have
No.
seen superheroes. They've seen teams of superheroes now, and it's got to be something special.
You got to bring something new to the table. I mean, Deadpool could have been a, but it brought something new to the table. And Civil War, you know, it could have been something that just would have been fatigued, but it didn't. And Black Panther looks like it's going to bring something new to the
Oh,
table as
yeah.
well.
Oh,
Oh, yeah, we didn't even mention Black Panther.
that one
So,
is
I
going to
mean,
be so hype.
yeah. So that's what you need to do. If you want to breathe fresh air into a genre that is starting to feel stale, bring something new to it to bring excitement back.
All right, so that's what the DC needs. It needs something new. Marvel certainly figured that out, and we can hope they can just keep doing it for 20 more films or whatever they have in mind. All right, so
Infinity.
that's right. It's why it's called Infinity Wars. So that'll wrap up our kind of overall superhero visual media of the moving image kind podcast. It's a really concise title there. My name is Sarah Moran, and you can find more of our work on kaboom.com. I want to thank my co-hosts, Matt and Roy.
Oi.
Hello. Goodbye.
And I guess if you want to follow our continued ramblings, you of course have the Kaboom Twitter account, which is at Kaboom Geeks, and that is with five O's.
No
No
apologies.
apologies. You can follow me at Sarah This Is.
You can follow me on Twitter at Geeky Geeky Ways.
And you can follow me at Twitter with Do You Smell Fish?
Nice. All right, guys. That was a good one.
Awesome. As a bat signal, that's your. Oh, sorry. That's your signal. That means we have to go now.
Yeah, that's what that means.
It's so cool.